This episode is brought to you by Fulton Stall Market, reopening their outdoor market in the Seaport District in May 2021. Learn more at fultonstallmarket.org.
This week on Meat and Three, we're jumping into a world filled with fizz, iridescence, and deliciousness. We're talking about bubbles.
It came from the air gas truck. Yeah, no, I never thought about it before that.
And I think it's emerged as a bulbous tea shops, a site of Asian-American youth identity building.
We're called the invisible industry because these products you don't really see, but they're around us in every way, every day.
Listen to Meat and Three wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to The Grape Nation, your weekly wine journey. Our guest is Laurence Farrad. We'll talk to Laurence about the Southern Rhone, Domaine du Perigord, and her other projects. I'm your host, Sam Benrubi. Stay with us for The Grape Nation on the Heritage Radio Network. We bring wine to the people. Laurence Farrad grew up at the family winery in the Southern Rhone of France, returning in 1987 after studying wine and the wine business to join her dad, working with him at their storied Domaine du Perigord in Châteauneuf-du-Pape. In 2005, Laurence took on full oversight in winemaking at the winery. Laurence has extended the family holdings, creating Château Perigord and her selection, Laurence Farrad. Welcome to the Grape Nation, Laurence.
Good evening, Sam. And it's an honor for me to be interviewed for The Grape Nation. Thank you very much.
Same thing here. I'm excited to talk to you. We're talking to Laurence remotely via Zencastr. Where are you right now, Laurence?
I'm at home, like many people in France, because we have the lockdown at 7 p.m.
Okay. All right. So, Laurence, let's get started this way. I want you to give us a little background on your journey in life and wine and how you got to the family winery and ultimately, you know, along with your dad, you know, running the family business Domaine du Perigord, you know, and the other properties. Tell me, you know, how you got to where you are.
It's a few circumstances. And each time I had been lucky to have a new challenge, I think I was all the time really willing to take it. And it's why probably I had a different stage of the, you know, of the business increasing. When I started with my father in 1987, we created the domain, and we were quite small and completely unknown. We worked mostly of the time in the vineyard. I mean, the vineyard, we can work a full year in a vineyard, but sometimes the weather doesn't really match with what we have to do here in the south of France. It's very windy and cold in the winter, but we don't have any snow. We don't have too much rain, but we have to prune in the wind in the Mistral, which is very, very hard work. And our vineyard are very low, like bushes. So for 2 years, I worked full-time in the vineyard. Then I decided to really take the way to export our first wine bottled to USA and Japan, because I had the contact there. And when I decided to export, I already studied in the marketing and the business, the wine business. Then I talk English. So at that time, it was quite rare, I can say, in this area in the south of France, when the people, they, especially a farmer, they talk English. Then I had that really chance to speak. And then all my, I could say my customers, they were very comfortable to really market the wine. And we started with 2,000 bottles per year. Then we increased to 4,000. Many also critics, like, of course, The Wine Advocate by Robert Parker and Michel Bétan for La Revue du Vin de France. And even my wine importer, they promoted Pego very well. And that was also very helpful for me. And we, in that way, we earn a little more money to expand the vineyard, to buy some more field, and then the Domaine de Pego increase and increase. Then also, I had the idea to create a new cuvée. The cuvée is usually the vineyard selections. And we have a wine made separate than the normal and standard cuvée. And of course, in 1998, we created that cuvée d'Acapo, make really the domain very famous over the world.
Right. That's your best wine, and you don't make it every year, right?
Exactly. Yeah, we only make it in the best vintage. And the best vintage, it's only decided when I'm picking grapes. You know, in Châteauneuf-du-Pape, we have to harvest by hand. So everything is hand-picked, and we select the best bunches. But when is the best weather from spring to fall? Right. For sure, a great vintage. But every day during the picking, I really taste the berries, and I know what if it will be the best wine to produce a d'Acapo. This is very right. important to right. taste and to be in a vineyard every day and to see how much. The quality of wine, the quality of grapes change from the beginning of the harvest to the end. It could be, of course, ripe at the beginning, but started very ripe, and it depends the weather we will have during the harvest time.
So to that point, so you started in the fields in 87, and then you got on the business side. You helped literally to sell the wine, grow the business, bring some cash in, and, you know, you were able to expand the business. You know, now you're back at the winery full-time doing everything, right?
Yeah.
You know, your dad is there. I know your mom is around, which is great. I'm very curious about this because I think in your region there's a big effect. I want to ask you about climate change in the region. You know, what effect has this had on the grapes, harvest time, you know, what grapes you should be growing and picking them? Has that changed through the years? Do you have to pick earlier? Are you changing, you know, your percentages of what you grow?
I could say the global warmer climate had for sure an impact in the world. Châteauneuf-du-Pape is not very significant, actually.
Okay.
But there is some part of the season with, I could say, a huge temperature difference. Like in the winter, it might be a little bit colder than it was, and summer hotter than it was. So this, in fact, there's a very big I say, lapse between the winter and the summer.
Right.
Some of the wine producer, they have a vineyard situated in Châteauneuf-du-Pape area where they are allowed to irrigate. On my part, where I have my field, which is east of the appellation between Châteauneuf-du-Pape, Courtaison, the village, and Bédary, the Zioses village, is like a triangle on the east of the appellation.
Right.
I'm not allowed to irrigate. And anyway, there's no water at all because it's almost the highest point of the appellation. We are not allowed to irrigate. There's no water around anyway. But we have a terroir very protected against that very hot temperature. Because it seems when we look to a terroir fully stony, to have a very dry soil. In fact, it's completely opposite. We have a lot of humidity under the stone. And the stone, they are very important in that regulation because there's no evaporation.
Right.
So the soil is still all the time humid. With humidity.
So you don't have to worry because of that, of the heat, of sugars ripening too early and having to harvest too early. Everything hasn't been affected in a major way, you're saying?
Yeah, for sure, I'm not too much worried today. We have to control to leave enough leaves on the plant in the summer to keep a shade for the right. for the bench
canopy. Yeah,
we of course we have also to when we have the opportunity to replant. I mean, every year we have a plant died in a vineyard, in a field, then we replace sometimes by another type of grapes than the Grenache. Of course, we have 80% Grenache, 70% Grenache, some of the part of the vineyard. But we replant with another type of grapes we are allowed in Châteauneuf-du-Pape, like Vacarès. The berries are bigger. Cinsault, the berries are bigger as well. When the berries is bigger, that means it will be more juicy, and that will help to for the press and to have a wine more fruity and a better balance between the concentration of some of the varieties like Grenache when it's very hot, slightly overripe, with a juicy type of grapes. And also we have a sandy soil. Sandy soils is very mineral and keep a lot of freshness and a nice acidity, which is very, very important.
Yes. So in talking about Grenache and the other grapes, that's the beauty of the Rhone. I mean, there's 13 plus varietals that you can use. But tell me if I'm wrong. I mean, I've had the wine many, many times, and of course I've had other Chateau Neufs. I look at Pigot as an icon of the traditional style of Châteauneuf-du-Pape in the Southern Rhone. Do you agree with me?
I wanted to keep the tradition, so I continue to keep the tradition. This is a traditional winemaking process with the material we have. I mean, the grapes we have, and we accommodate with the weather to have the best, the perfect ripeness to pick the bunch. And we continue to make that traditional winemaking process with a full cluster. That means we don't destamp. We don't take the green stamp off. We keep all the cluster. And that give to the wine a spine, some freshness and a nice acidity. Some of the vintage, they could be a little more tannic because we have tannin from the skin and tannin from the stem. And it depends if the vintage is juicy, then we don't feel too much the tannin from the stem. But if it's a very low yield, because we don't have enough rain in the summer, then the stem is in a higher percentage, in fact. Then we have to we have some tannin. But the tannin, they are important. If the vintage is small yield, then of course we have to age the wine longer to have softer tannin. But as you know, at Domaine de Pigot, we won't change the winemaking process. And this is very interesting because we can guess when we make a vertical tasting, average the weather we had in that vintage or another.
Right. So you're making no concessions to modern day tastes. You're making your wine
exactly
in the traditional way, the way you want. Now, when you look around, and I'm sure, you know, you taste wines from all over the world and the region, have you seen stylistic changes with Chateau Neuf de Pape in the region through the years? I mean, have you seen a variety of styles, tasted a variety other than your wines?
There's many wine producer. They sometimes could doubt when they start the business, or they want to change the tradition, or they want to experiment something else, which I understand, and especially the younger generation. I understand there are many change today, but there were as well many change during, the 20s, the 2000s. They were very big change. The result about the change is not very early. Mostly of the time, you have the result 10, 20 years later. And this is important for the young winemaker because they will know in the future if they were right or not. Because the Chateau Neuf du Pape, the tradition is to drink it 15 years, 20 years later.
Right.
And if we want some spiciness, some complexity in a wine, some wine very warm, and when we open a Chateau Neuf du Pape at the beginning of the dinner, we want to have all this flavor development during the dinner to the end of the dinner, and to really have of this range of flavor that no one else's wine can really give to the consumer. It's crazy because we have the power, we have the spicy, we have the alcohol that bring the aroma out of the glass, and this change make very a lot of interest in our palate. It's exactly like the modern food today. When you have some course in your plate, you like to have some creamy, crispy acidity.
Right.
You want to have something sparkling in your mouth to really keep awake. And this is very interesting also for the Chateau Neuf du Pape, because with the 13 different type of grapes, we have this very interest when we taste the wine.
Now, is one of the things that happened were producers increasing the alcohol levels? You know, Chateau Neuf du Pape is a big wine, 13, 14. I mean, were people pushing the alcohol to 15, 16? Was that one of the issues?
No. Today, the people in the world, they are not really a fan about the high alcohol.
too much, right?
Yeah, it's too much. But in our regulation in Châteauneuf-du-Pape, to have the agreement of Châteauneuf-du-Pape appellation d'origine protégée or controlled, we need to produce a wine minimum 12.5% alcohol. So this is our minimum anyway to be a Châteauneuf-du-Pape.
Right.
During the 2000, the people, they really push the extraction, and they push to have a higher alcohol, to have a more full body. But the for me, the best wine in any appellation, anywhere in the world, is a wine with a great balance. When you feel something in a wine, I mean, if you feel too much alcohol, if you feel too much tannin, if you feel too much fruit, for me, it's unbalanced. When it's a perfect balance, that's smooth, and you just take a pleasure when you drink a wine.
I agree totally. Do you think people were pushing the alcohol because that was a style that was getting higher ratings, you know, from a lot of the critics?
It was a time the critics, they like high alcohol, probably
right.
to have probably to have to make a distinction between a Bordeaux or between the other wine as well. So Châteauneuf-du-Pape had a reputation to be a powerful wine, a big wine. But what is the big wine for a consumer or another consumer? If, example, you taste an Australian wine, you have or some of Californian as well from south of California, then you can have a very high alcohol contain. But for the wine producer and the consumer of south of California or Australian, even 15 is not high. But for someone who produce a wine with a lower alcohol, 15 is too much. It depends. But for sure, the people, they thought a big Châteauneuf-du-Pape was a Châteauneuf-du-Pape with a high alcohol content. But for me, this is not the truth. A good Châteauneuf-du-Pape and the powerful Châteauneuf-du-Pape may be the power might be from the taste of the deepness. We have some clay, the terroir, it's clay, but with red clay. Red clay means, in fact, we have some iron contained in the soil. And that gives some licorice taste. That gives some density in the middle palate. And then we can talk about the power as well. But not the power in the volume, but the power in the deepness.
Right. I want to talk to you about the domain, and I want to talk to you about the wines in the region. But before that, I just want to go back on something. You know, you mentioned early on that in 87, you know, you created the domain. But just take a few seconds. The family's connection to wine didn't start in 87. It goes back many years. Is that true?
The family, yes, from my grandfather's, my father's side. But the three quarters of my family arrived from Italy. And the Italian, they knew how to make the wine. Then, of course, I have some roots, very old. And my grandmother, she was the winemaker. But her origin is from Italy. And my grandfather was a farmer, but he farmed grapes, olives, cherries, and different vegetables. Right. But really, in a wine, that was my grandparents. And my grandmother, she was really, for me, one of the best winemaker. She always inspired me.
So women rock at Pego, which is great. That's nice to hear. And I know you, and I know your daughter Justine is in the business too. We'll talk about her in a couple of minutes. Let's talk about the domain. You make three Chateau Neuf de Pops. You know, we mentioned them, but we'll go over them. You make a couple of whites. But before that, and we discussed a little of this, but tie it together for me a little more. Tell me a little about the climate you're dealing with. Explain what those Mistral winds are. The soil you got into, but you didn't get into the Galais rule. There's the sand, the limestone, and the clay. You have multiple vineyard sites. You know, I want to hear about that. And you did mention it. You deal with, you know, over a dozen, you know, varietals, of which, you know, the Grenache is the predominant. So tell me a little about, you know, the area that you're, you know, farming with.
Okay.
Weather, land, you know, all of that.
Chateau Neuf du Pape is in the south of the Rhône Valley. Is famous from the 14th century when the Pope they arrive. What I have to say for sure, Chateau Neuf du Pape is a Pope new castle. But we had nine Popes, but there's no connection with neuf in French means nine, but there's no connection with the number. It's a pop Newcastle. The pop, they arrive in Châteauneuf, they arrive in Avignon, they built the pop palace, and they built the summer house, the castle in Châteauneuf du Pape. They planted vines. And they planted vines because it was probably the best climate to produce a wine and to have some grapes with a short plant like a bushes with a very big stock. You know, the Grenache has a big stock. Since 1870, when we had the phylloxera, all our varietal are grafted on the American rootstock. So we have a Grenache, which is a very big stock grafted on the American rootstock rupestris. Nice. This is a one of more technical, but this is important.
It's okay.
Because we had phylloxera, and phylloxera in France devastated three quarters of French vineyard. The pop
everywhere, right?
Yeah, except the vineyard in sandy soil. But sandy, right. I mean salty,
right?
Like you can have on the west, the Vendée, or even completely south of France, some vineyard. Before the phylloxera, so before 1870. So this is very interesting to taste the wine before the phylloxera, and there's no plant graft. That means it's franc de pied, the direct stock. The Grenache was probably the most appropriate in this area was a very strong wind, the Mistral. The Grenache is short, robust, and can grow in the stone. Then after we had Syrah. Syrah is the only type of grapes we have the right to put on the trailers. All the other varieties we have to put in a goblet, that means bushes.
Right.
All this regulation of Chateau Neuf du Pape was created by Le Baron Le Roy de Boisseau-Marié. The Baron installed all the regulation, and the regulation of Chateau Neuf du Pape was in 1936. Then we had that famous bottle. You know, in the glass, it's printed with the key of the Pope and the hat of the Pope.
Right.
That the bottle was created in 1937, and that was a guarantee. The wine bottled in that glass was from a vinegar, a winemaker, and he bottled his wine. So that was very interesting, because before, a lot of wine in bulk was shipped to Burgundy or to Bordeaux or even to England to be bottled.
Mm.
Is why Châteauneuf-du-Pape, they created that bottled glass. And that's very important because it's very historical, that bottle of wine. Then to be back about the vineyard, Châteauneuf-du-Pape, it's on 3,300 hectares, which is average 7,000 acres. And this is the appellation contrôlée. Outside of that limit, it's not Châteauneuf-du-Pape anymore. Over that board is Côte du Rhône or Vin de France.
Right.
In that 7,000 acres, we have four different terroirs. The main terroir is soil is stony, like the big pebbles.
Smooth pebbles, right?
Yes. We have sandy soil, but it's not salty. It's sandy, like silice. We have clay, and we have limestone. Domaine de Pégot, as I said, is mostly on the east of the appellation. It's all on the east of the appellation. And we have the three terroirs, sandy, clay, and stony. We don't have limestone. This is very important because we have in Châteauneuf-du-Pape 13 types of grapes. So Grenache, Syrah, Mourvèdre, and each of the varietal gives give a characteristic in the wine and gives a note in the wine. And we is why we call it the symphony of the 13 different varietals.
Right.
It's why I call it the da capo and the music, the da capo.
Ah.
To have that symphony.
Your best wine is the da capo, right?
Yes. To repeat that symphony of the 13 type of grapes. For the Châteauneuf-du-Pape, we have so the Grenache. But the Grenache planted in a sandy soil will be very elegant, with a nice minerality, with a great length. The Grenache planted in a stony soil, it will be more powerful, high alcohol contained, sometimes overripe.
Mm.
And the Grenache in a clay will be licorice, will be spicy, and really deep and tight. And the Grenache in a limestone will be quite powerful, with more sharp, and also great length because it's quite mineral as well. So this is very interesting because we have four terroirs. We are 280 wine producer with four terroirs and 13 different varietals planted in everywhere. That give thousand and thousand combination.
Sure.
Plus.
Now, you're on multiple parcels, too, right? I mean, you're not on contiguous. Like La Croix is, you know, one parcel, and then you have the parcel around.
La Croix, it's sandy soil only for Domaine de Pégot. It's a 4.5 hectares, so 8 acres. 9 acres, sorry. 9 acres of sandy soil, La Croix. And La Croix sandy soil for Domaine de Pégot, it's 70% of the da capo. So that means the da capo is a power wine because it's only in a great vintage, but it's very elegant because it's come from the sandy soil.
Now, did you acquire La Croix later on, or that was something that was always a family property?
No, we bought Lacroix in 1995. And I remember well because my son is born in 1995.
Now, aren't there other Chateau Neuf de Pop makers that, you know, have land on Lacroix too?
For sure. Lacroix yeah. is one of the largest part of Chateau Neuf du Pape.
Right. All right. Laurence, we have to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk to you about some of your vineyard practices and cellar practices, but we'll get to that in a minute. We're talking to Laurence Farad. Laurence is the proprietor of Domaine du Pégot, and we are also going to talk to Laurence about some of our other projects. You're listening to The Grape Nation on the Heritage Radio Network. We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Fulton Stall Market, reopening their outdoor market in the Seaport District in May 2021. Fulton Stall Market is a nonprofit, indoor, public farmers market. It offers locally grown and produced, healthy and affordable, fresh food to the Seaport and Lower Manhattan community. Fulton Stall Market is a direct sales outlet for over 100 New York region farmers and small batch independent food producers. They have been operating as a public market to serve the Seaport community since 2015. While you shop at Fulton Stall Market, you can pick up a few guides from Escape Maker's informational kiosk. Escape Maker connects urbanites with local farm, winery, craft beverage, and culinary getaways within a day's drive or train ride of New York City. Learn about day trips from New York, where you can explore the best agritourism the region has to offer. Learn more at fultonstallmarket.org and escapemaker.com.
Okay, we're back. We're back with my guest, Laurence Farad. Laurence, we talked about Pégot and really everything that surrounds it, the weather, the soils, the grapes. Tell me a few things. Let's talk about vineyard practices first and then take me in the cellar. Are you practicing sustainability, organics? Do you go as far as biodynamics? Tell me what you're doing, because we all know how important, you know, farming is. So how are you farming your grapes?
We today all our red wine, red vineyard, we work in the organic way,
okay.
But we are not certified because
okay. Many people are like that.
In 2018, we had a lot of rain and a lot of mold. And it was not easy to really, fight with that. And right. Usually we don't have mold because with the wind, the Mistral dry up everything. Then we don't need to spray because it's easy to make organic wine, in this area.
Right.
In white is different. White, the white vineyard, we have we have 3 acres in white, and we'll expect to have another vineyard in white, and that will be 4 acres. In white, we practice the biodynamic culture.
Ah,
so it's even
you're able to
more.
Serious committed.
Yeah.
Now on the whites, quickly, what are the varietals, the predominant varietals, and what else are you blending in your whites?
It's claret. Claret, it's very important. Claret gives the acidity. In the south of France, we have that hot weather, and having a white with a high percentage alcohol with a heavy taste overmature or sometimes slightly oxidized is not what we are looking for the white wine. We need acidity, we need freshness, we need a white flower, peach, a lot of or grapefruit taste. This is very, very important. And this is the only claret. Claret is very, very important to have and give that acidity. Beside the claret and Châteauneuf-du-Pape, claret is, for me, it's 60%. Then we have 20% Grenache white to give the characteristic of Châteauneuf-du-Pape. For me, to produce a Châteauneuf-du-Pape, we have to blend with a little Grenache. Right. 20% Grenache. Then we have 10% Bourboulenc. Bourboulenc is a local grape. Gives sometimes some bitterness. And bitterness is good for the freshness. Like we can find some bitterness in a grapefruit. And then we have a Roussanne. Roussanne is quite famous here.
Right.
But Roussanne, we really need to handle properly the bunch to not having too much gold color in the wine.
Right. The wines from the whites from Châteauneuf-du-Pape are delicious and, you know, underappreciated to some extent, I guess, because there's not a lot made and a lot doesn't get around. But, you know, I'm encouraging anyone, if they ever see them, they're so well made. Tell me about, we talked about farming practices. Tell me in the cellar, you know, I'm assuming if you follow organics and biodynamics with the whites, you're carrying, you know, a lot of that mindset and those principles into the cellar. Tell me about the cellar practices.
For the white, we have two cuvées. We have the cuvée réservée. We produce cuvée réservée for many, many years in white. I think since 1989, but we were not very good at that time. So we really make a lot of progress in the quality for the white.
That's good to hear.
Yes, yes. You know, yeah. We have all the, we need to progress all the life. It's normal. It's human. We have two quality. We have the cuvée réservée, which is a blend. I told you, 60% claret, 20% grenache white, 10% bourboulenc, and 10% roussanne. We press directly all the grapes together, and we keep the juice in a stainless steel vat. We cool it down to have all the sediment decant. Then we rack, and then we raise slightly the temperature to average 14 degrees Celsius. And the winemaking process starts with natural yeast. This is very important.
It does.
Yes.
Okay.
Since we have organic culture in red and biodynamic in white, we have a very indigene yeast activity, which is very important.
Right.
We make the wine in a stainless steel, usually with a low temperature. The white will ferment for 3 weeks, 1 month. Concerning our top cuvée in white, we call it a tempo, which is a pendant of the da capo, but a tempo in white. We have three different varietals. We have Grenache, Roussanne, and claret, 1/3 of each. When we arrive in a winery, we make the wine in three different continents. We use the concrete egg, very small, 600 liters egg. Concrete egg, it's very interesting because since we use the concrete egg since 2015, we have a creaminess in the middle palate for the white. Then we have a nice acidity from the part of the white we make the wine in stainless steel. And then we make a part of the wine in old oak barrique.
Ah.
The a tempo, we are looking for the blend after between the concrete egg, the old oak barrique, and the stainless steel to have the perfect balance. If I, you know, for the white wine, we have to build a white wine.
Right.
And it's very delicate. For me, it's quite intellectual to make a amazing white.
Yeah, it sounds like many steps.
Yes.
You know, which is very interesting. I wish there was more of it.
And the atempo, you know, it's very complex because we have this nice freshness with stainless steel, with a creaminess in the middle palate, and slightly nutty in the back due to the old barrique. And really that balance and step by step in your mouth and back nose, the lens never stop. And this is that circle. It's very, very interesting. And the white today, getting older, the white wine for me, it's more intellectual. And
It ages. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
That sounds great. I wanted to ask you about
for the red
current. Yeah.
So for the red, as I said, is a traditional winemaking process. The red, to compare with the white, making the red in a tradition, the most important is what really were picked in the vineyard. That will give us the result. For the red, we have a three cuvée. We have the cuvée réservée, which is all the different vineyards co-planted and co-fermented with a full cluster. The winemaking process is 15 days maximum. We gently pump over. No punching, no délestage, nothing is technical. We don't cool down as well. No cooling.
Right.
After 15 days, we press. And we age the cuvée réservée 2 years in a large cask, usually, or I don't know, it's 60 hectoliters, 6,000 liters, maybe 45,000 gallons, or I'm not sure, I don't know.
It's wood though, right?
Yes, wood.
It's
only
wood. Okay.
Then from the cuvée réservée, after 2 years, the cuvée réservée, we blend the barrels where the cuvée réservée age to make a cuvée réservée the final blend of, example, vintage 2018. We bottled always in November. Then we fill up back from that final blend. We fill up back one barrel to age an extra 2 years to become the cuvée Laurence. The cuvée Laurence is always the same wine as the cuvée réservée, but with an extra aging.
How much longer?
2 years. So that means the cuvée Laurence is 4 years in a cask, in a large old oak barrel.
Right.
Why? Because the people, they don't have a very good cellar, and they want a wine, Châteauneuf-du-Pape, mature. They can buy the cuvée Laurence. The cuvée Laurence is not specifically a higher cuvée because it's the same as a réservé, but longer aging in the barrels, the wine has less tannin, everything is better integrated with a more spiciness, and you have really the result of a wine faster aging.
Right.
For the people, they have a good cellar. I advise the cuvée réservée, they lie down the bottle and they store the wine for 10 years, 20 years. the Cuvée Réservée will close down. I mean, the wine will close down and open back probably in 7 or 10 years later. For the Cuvée Laurence, they don't need to lie down the bottle. They can open it and they can pour the wine. It's always open, mature, and ready drinkable.
That's great. And the Da Capo?
And the Da Capo is a vineyard selection in a top vintage, which is decided during the harvest. And it's the same winemaking process as a Réservé, same aging as a Réservé, 2 years in the barrel. But the Da Capo
it's more a site selection.
Yes, yes.
The Da Capo.
The Da Capo is 70% sandy soil to have that elegance, but it's stony soil, it's red clay as well. And the taste of the Da Capo is very particular, very unique to with that, I could say, sort of it's powdery and creamy as well. And the big wine with a lot of finesse. And the Da Capo, when we produce the Da Capo, we don't make the Cuvée Laurence.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Every vintage, we have only 2 cuvées. That means for normal vintage, we produce Cuvée Réservée, Cuvée Laurence. But the Laurence will be bottled, released 2 years later, 4 years in total. If we decide to do the Da Capo, then we don't make the Cuvée Laurence in the same vintage.
Right. I wanted to bring something up that you were able to spread your wings by doing a couple of things. You know, the Chateau Neuf is very specific, and you got into very specific detail, which I think everyone understands a lot better. But in the region, as you mentioned, there are vineyards outside of Chateau Neuf de Pape. And about a decade ago, you created Chateau Pigot. And not too long ago, you created Selection Laurence Farad. These were vehicles for you to make other grapes other than the Chateau Neuf de Pape, true?
For Chateau Pigot, the Côte du Rhône and the Côte du Rhône village, we don't have we have similar grapes of Chateau Neuf du Pape. This is also a part of, we have a regulation softer than Chateau Neuf du Pape, of course, but we have a very strict regulation as well concerning the grapes variety we plant in the Côte du Rhône and Côte du Rhône village. Example for the white Côte du Rhône, Cuvée Laune. Laune is a little stream going, you know, on the side of the main fleuve of the Rhône. We call it Cuvée Laune because our vineyard is very close to that little river. We use, of course, the Clairette, the majority Clairette, and we have... we have a type of grape, Clairette, Grenache, Roussanne, Bourboulenc. But for the Côte du Rhône, we can use also Uni Blanc. Uni Blanc is, but we can also blend maximum 10%. So that means also we have a very strict regulation for the Côte du Rhône as well. And it doesn't really change a lot as the Chateau Neuf du Pape. And for the red, is the same. We have the typical blend for our Chateau Pigot is 60% Grenache, 20% Syrah, 20% Mourvèdre. Then it's very... I always wanted to produce a Côte du Rhône or Côte du Rhône village with a traditional winemaking process, exactly the same as our Chateau Neuf du Pape. Hand-picking, because... on the Côte du Rhône, we are allowed to pick by a machine, but we hand picking to have that stamp. With a machine, the machine battles the berries but leaves the stamp. So for us, we want to make the wine the same as our Chateau Neuf du Pape with a full cluster. Then everything is picked by hand. And for the Côte du Rhône and Côte du Rhône Village Red, the Cuvée McLaurin and the Cuvée Sétier, it's same winemaking process as our Châteauneuf-du-Pape, but we age in the vat. And you have exactly the expression of the terroir, which is a clay and very stony terroir at the Château Pigot. And this is the expression of the typical blend of the red varietal. For me, I wanted something as a reference, simple, right, made, but with all the expression of the terroir and the great, the local grape variety.
Sounds great. Laurence, we're running out of time, and before I let you go, I want to do something with you that I do with all my guests, and it's called the wine list. I'm going to ask you 5 questions about your wine preference because I'm very curious about what you drink. So I'm going to ask you the questions, spontaneous, don't dwell on it. You know, we don't have a lot of time, so move quickly, and I'll lead you through them. The first question is, what are you drinking now? And that reference is, besides tasting your wines, what else do you like to drink? You know, what's on your table? What are you trying? What's in the fridge? Do you change wines as the season changes? What are you enjoying right now?
It's a very difficult question for me because I enjoy all the good wine.
All right. So tell me the top few things you're enjoying. I get that. That's a nice answer that you like so much.
I like champagne because this is usually I start a dinner with the aperitif with champagne.
I agree with you on that.
Then I like Burgundy wine.
Okay.
Yesterday, I had my friend from Alsace, Domaine de L'Oriel, Claude Weinzorn, and we had a Riesling brand aged 2004. It was absolutely fantastic.
You hit all the good stuff. You hit champagne, yes, Burgundy, and Riesling from the Alsace.
I love Riesling from Moselle as well. I like some Californian wine. I'm a fan sine qua non.
Yeah, well, everybody loves it. I actually had Maggie Harrison, who used to work with Manfred. She's making Pinot Noir up in Oregon. She was on the show. All right, I'm going to the next question. What is Laurence's favorite wine and food pairing? Not what you think is a good wine pairing, but what you like. You know, and I know you don't eat it every week, month, night, but what is that perfect wine and food pairing in your mind?
Châteauneuf-du-Pape.
with what?
With
what's
lamb,
the perfect
with lamb with curry. Okay. I love curry.
Lamb with
a lamb curry, lamb with couscous, yassa. There are different I love the different cooking from world as well, but spicy cooking is why I like some Portuguese cooking as well with chorizo and Spanish as well. I like with a lot of piment with an onion, garlic.
The wine holds up. The wine holds up well to that. Those are all good ones.
And Châteauneuf-du-Pape really fight with spicy food. For me, this is the best pairing. Yesterday, I cooked some traditional Senegal lamb, the yassa, and we pair that typical course with the white from Alsace, and it matched. And then when it cool the fire, and the Châteauneuf-du-Pape red. Well, it was the Dacapo 2007 yesterday, really fight and make the spiciness even stronger. And it was fabulous.
So it complemented it in a good way. All right, that's Those are great. Now, I didn't mention, I'm going to post all these on our social media. Everybody loves to see them. All right, so third question, and let's see if you could do this one. Do you have a favorite wine restaurant and or bar, you know, whether it's in the region or in your travels, that just has great people, great selection, a good vibe, you know, a local place, a restaurant that has a killer wine list? Does anything come to mind, one or two things?
In my area?
Yeah, I guess, because who knows the area better than you? And if anyone visits the region...
Actually, we are very proud in Châteauneuf-du-Pape because La Mère Germaine had his first star Michelin.
Ah, nice.
And then La Mère Germaine, unfortunately, with the pandemic, we cannot really have many restaurants. We have no restaurant open. Right, but La Mère Germaine with a star Michelin Châteauneuf, this is important. But we have also many local restaurants. I try different restaurants. But I like one of the restaurants in Belgium who is a very good friend of mine called L'Invincible, the Invincible. And is in Anvers. And Kenny Brusson, I like his cooking. Is fantastic.
And those are good ones.
Yes, right, it's not star Michelin, but it's perfect.
No. It's what feels good. You know, usually that does, because you don't have a star doesn't mean you're not doing great food.
But there's so many good wine in the world. There's so many great restaurants in the world.
I'm sure. And you travel.
Being with origin of Italian. My God, in Italy, it's fantastic. I like pasta.
Yeah.
Alla arrabbiata. All right, so
spicy. Answer my fourth question. The question is, what is your favorite all-time wine? Now, when I asked that, it sort of was, what was the rarest, most expensive wine that you drank? But the question really has become, what is that wine that was important to you, is important, that changed the way you look at it? You know, maybe it was something you had with your dad or your first Burgundy. What's an important wine to you?
When I was, I would say 30 years old, and once I tasted a Musigny. And probably that really changed my life.
Okay, so was that the first time you had a Musigny?
Probably I had Musigny when I did some party in Burgundy.
Right, but this
one day
really
I had one Musigny really blow my mind. And this is
what it was? Do you remember?
I cannot say.
That's okay. All right. That's the way you answer that question. All right. Here's the last question, and we got to wrap up. And I think you could handle this well. I ask all my guests the best wine around $15 to $20 American. I ask for a red and a white. And I'm gonna help you answer this because I think the Côtes du Rhône are incredible values. Mm-hmm. Agree?
Yes. Yeah.
So if I'm spending $15, $20, $22 here in the United States, I can get some good Côte du Rhône for that, right?
Yes.
White and red?
White and red, sure.
Okay. All right. So that's and you have in your chateau, you have Côte du Rhône in those price ranges, correct?
Sure. Yes, we have white. Red, and we have also the Vin de France, rosé,
Vin de France.
The pink.
Right.
We have the pink.
All right, so not only can you answer that question, you make the wines that answers that question. Laurence, we have to wrap up. I told you the hour would go fast, as I tell all my guests. Let me do a quick wrap up, and then I want to just get a little info from you.
Thank you.
So if you have a question, suggestion, wine happening, hit me up at sam@thegrapenation.com. That's sam@thegrapenation.com. Subscribe to the Grape Nation podcast on Apple, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods. Follow us on Facebook at The Grape Nation, on Instagram at SBenRuby, on Twitter at BenRuby, but you can always use the hashtag The Grape Nation on both. We're trying to build a community on Clubhouse. Follow us at BenRuby. As I mentioned, we will post Laurence's wine list answers on our social media sites in the next week. Laurence, if we want to find more information about Pago, Domaine, Chateau, Selection Laurence, Ferrand, where should we go?
On our website, pago.com.
Okay, P-E-G-A-U, in case everyone knows.
Yes.
Pego.com.
Yeah. Justine and I will answer to all the questions.
Okay, that would be great. And on social media, are you on Instagram?
On Instagram, Domaine du Pego.
Okay.
And Facebook as well, Domaine Pego.
Okay, perfect. All right, I want to thank my guest, Laurence Ferrand. Thank you for taking the time, Laurence. Thank you to our engineer, Armin, and everyone at the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sam BenRuby, and you've been listening to The Grape Nation.
The Grape Nation is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. And thanks for listening.